Let's talk about the spiritual ego and how to dismantle it. If you want a full, real, embodied spiritual life, I think it's essential you know about the six types of spiritual ego. Many of my teachers have mentioned it in passing, maybe not calling it the spiritual ego, but more or less talking about the same phenomenon. But I don't feel like they emphasize it enough, and unfortunately I've met many people whose spiritual ego is so strong that it leads to dysfunction. And really, if you get caught in the spiritual ego, you can spend years chasing your tail. I mean years chasing your tail. And you might even derail your entire spiritual path and your growth as a human being. Sounds a bit depressing, but the good news is that avoiding the spiritual ego means you're going to have a much more whole, integrated spiritual life. And actually, the solution to all of this is quite simple. At the end, I'm going to give you a few principles to live by, and then kind of like a spiritual, moment-to-moment spiritual practice for dismantling the spiritual ego. A little disclaimer before we begin. I'm on the spiritual path. I have been for almost a decade. I'm a meditation teacher and quite an experienced meditator. But still, I'm not particularly enlightened. There's definitely hundreds of people out there with deeper embodiment than I have and deeper insight. So these are my conclusions. This is what I've come to after walking the spiritual path for some time. But they're works in progress. So take them, run with them, see if they're helpful. This is the Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm Ross. We blend spirituality, psychology and self-help to help you shine a light on your inner workings. The insights I share have helped me deeply understand myself and transform my life. So listen to this podcast if you want to get real, powerful insights and avoid all the fluffy nonsense that abounds in self-help circles. You'll know more about your psychology than 99% of people out there. You can find me on all the major podcasting platforms or head to deeppsychology.com, visited by thousands every month, for tons of free resources. Okay, so first we should talk about what the spiritual ego actually is before we talk about the different types of it. Think of it as a set of tendencies that we can all fall into whenever we get involved with spirituality. And basically what these tendencies do is they stop us living a true embodied spiritual life. So spiritual ego isn't just a single kind of personality. It shows up as different characters or avatars or tendencies. And I've actually got six that we're going to go into in a minute. But we fall into spiritual ego whenever we sort of use spiritual knowledge and teachings to bolster ourselves rather than self-transcend and directly contact deep wisdom. So here's a few signs that spiritual ego is present either in yourself or in other people. It's when we mistake teachings and guidance for first-hand contact with the realities that they're pointing to. It's when we mistake the finger for the moon. We get obsessed with like the cool catchphrases and the sexy language, and we don't actually contact the real thing. It's when we overanalyze and overcognize spiritual teachings. And basically our tendency with all knowledge is to analyze and think about it and to cognize it. But spirituality, as far as I'm concerned, is about living and embodying. And if we go too far into the thinking and the analyzing, we can fall into spiritual ego. I've actually got an entire profile which deals with that issue. It's when we think spirituality is a solution to all our problems and we grab onto it too tightly. It's when we build up our human identity rather than stripping it back. It's when we forget that spirituality is more of a stripping back, a return home to where we've always been, but we've not really been aware of it. It's a death. It's not really a building up, a becoming something more. Even though on the outside that seems to be the case, on the inside the experience is quite different. I think it's crucial to notice that we're all capable of spiritual ego. this isn't a person that's separate from us. It's really just tendencies we can fall into, as I said. And this is because it takes time to truly embody spiritual awareness. And it's not this linear growth curve. Often our growth comes and goes. We have glimpses, or we have days or weeks where we're in contact with it, and then it seems to disappear. After experiences of deep insight, deep spiritual wisdom, we're often left with memories and ideas rather than permanent contact and transformation. So to compensate, we cling on to words and concepts, which is what we do anyway, but with spirituality it's more tempting. It's because we often enjoy talking about things rather than continually embody them, because embodiment, as I said, takes a long time. So we talk about it and we forget that talking is really kind of a distraction. And there's another reason that we're all capable of spiritual ego, and it's because we want others to discover what we have. And so we can start talking about it to other people, and we can get really concerned with words and ideas and concepts, but we can also fall into talking too much and trying to change other people. And that's when spiritual ego can become a problem. And I guess as we go on here and we look at the six main kinds that I've identified, remember that the trick to spiritual ego or to spirituality is your level of attachment to it. Do you become obsessed with the teachings and the words and the concepts and hijack them and sort of create an identity around them? Or do you see what is being taught and take the actual words and pointers and books and lectures and all this with a light touch and just go straight to the embodiment? I think that's really important. How attached to the teachings are you? And generally speaking, the more attached you are, the more spiritual ego you're capable of having. Great, so let's look at the six kinds of spiritual ego that I've identified before we talk about how to dismantle them. And as we explore these characters, I want you to realize that it's inevitable that you'll fall into one or more, possibly once, possibly many times on your journey, as will others around you. So keep an eye out for them in yourself and in others. Looking for them in others can be a distraction in a sense, but it can also show you how not to do spirituality. So, type one, in no particular order. Type one, the theorizer. The theorizer, think of the theorizer as a great scholar. This is the profile that's been around the block 500 times. It's studied all kinds of schools and theories and teachers, and it's compared them all. And it has so much knowledge of, or book knowledge of spirituality, that it believes that it's understood the spiritual path. It enjoys theorizing and debating and philosophizing. And basically it talks too much, and this takes it out of direct experience. Second kind, the mean monk. The mean monk, as I've come across it, is it has genuine embodiment. It has actually genuinely realized some spiritual realities. But instead of this being a humbling experience, which it often is, especially if you take a bodhisattva vow, it becomes arrogant and overbearing, and it uses these realizations to bolster itself and to basically turn into a bit of a dictator. It starts preaching and converting, it starts talking down to other people, and it basically forgets the social emotional dimension of life. It forgets that communication is important, other people's emotions are important. We live in a society where you can't just say whatever you want to people. And it ignores that, and it believes that it's doing what's best for its victims, even though they're being incredibly obnoxious. And I've come across this several times, and it's quite an obvious avatar, actually, when you see it in other people. But also, of course, look for it in yourself. The third one, the third kind of spiritual ego, and I think we all need to be very careful of this, because of the kind of people that tend to get involved with spirituality. This isn't a condemnation, it's just kind of a fact, and it doesn't mean that if you identify with these things that you can't contact deep spiritual wisdom. But again, it's when you mistake deep spiritual wisdom for the paraphernalia and the words and the concepts and the community. The hippie is the third kind. The hippie loves incense and good vibes and calm and community and getting together in a group. And it believes that the goal of spirituality is to connect with others, to find peace and love, to save the planet, to talk about, I don't know, feminism and equality. It then twists the deepest esoteric teachings to justify all of this. And in the end, what happens is that committed spiritual practice, say meditation or yoga, gives way to feelings and positive experience and political protests and group coming together as a group and all of this. And again, we should all be careful of this. And again, I'm not condemning these things necessarily. I'm just condemning them when they obscure the real depth of what we're actually doing. And having been part of several communities which were kind of breeding grounds for the hippie avatar, I just found that there was something missing in those communities. You know, there was a lot of getting together and talking and sharing and talking about emotions and talking about how we're all together and one and peace and love. But what was missing was the deep spiritual connection and the deep spiritual cultivation that really has nothing to do with community in a certain way, and it has nothing to do with good feelings, and it has nothing to do with politics. And I don't know if people running communities like this have a deep spiritual connection or not. It's hard to really tell sometimes because the language can be very similar in a certain way. But you have to ask yourself, am I letting this avatar's behavior actually get in the way of just doing committed practice, committed spiritual practice? And am I talking too much? Am I getting together with other people too much and not really going into the depths of spiritual wisdom? Okay, type four, the introspective. This is another tricky one because we live in an era of psychology and therapy and self-help, and that is wonderful. It's completely transformed my life, as has meditation. But this is another danger, and it comes from this being too psychological. Basically, the introspective believes that the point of the spiritual path is to undo all of our psychological knots and become a free, clean and liberated human being. It journals, it analyzes itself, it becomes hyper aware of thoughts and emotions, it understands the mind's workings to a very high degree. But the problem is it never really sees the nature of mind. It never sees beyond the mind. It's lost in the surface. It's lost in the analysis and understanding. It never really penetrates to the essence of what mind actually is. And this is a subtle trap, but it's a very big trap. My partner actually had a sudden insight into this brand of spiritual ego one day when she missed a train to London by a few seconds. It's quite painful when that happens, right? And all of a sudden, she told me that she was able to see the mind as this bunch of empty mental phenomena in a way that she hadn't seen before. Up until that point, she tried to polish the mind, to polish her sense of identity, to polish her psychology, to understand it all, to see all the patterns, to undo all the patterns. but without at any point really, again, seeing it and seeing that she was not the mind. Not as a concept, but as an actual lived reality. The trick here is that actually we do want to clean ourselves up as human beings. And spirituality, if done properly, I'm pretty convinced that it helps you do that. The problem is that we shouldn't mistake spirituality for that alone. We need to have the deep insight, the special insight, as they call it in Mahamudra practice, special insight. We need to have special insight into the mind. It's not enough just to psychologically understand ourselves. We need to actually see the nature of mind. And this is the main principle of all Buddhist practice. So the introspective, watch out for it. Number five, the hermit. Now, the hermit is basically the character that makes their entire life about spirituality and forgets everything else. So it does nothing but read spiritual books, discuss spiritual topics. It doesn't stand people who don't share its enthusiasm. And I've found often that this character actually does have deep embodiment, but it grabs on far too tightly to it. It creates this identity of me and the awakened people versus the non-awakened people, and it really grabs onto that, and it can't stand the non-awakened people. It hides away from the world, it hates the world, and it believes that spirituality is the answer to all our problems. It becomes aloof and it can't hold normal daily conversations without getting all spiritual. And I've met people like this, and I've also seen this in myself, actually. Not so much now. I feel like it's my spiritual life is healthier now, but I've seen it and I've found a good metaphor for it. And this comes from my own teacher, who's Lama Surya Das. He likens, or I've taken this metaphor as a metaphor for the hermit. He talks about burying our head in the sand as spiritual practitioners. Our head is in the sand. We're actually in the sand. We're seeing the depth. We're below the surface. We're into the depths of the nature of mind and of reality. But the rest of our body is hanging out. And it's quite unsightly to other people. We can't see it, but other people can see it. And this is the thing. When we get lost in the hermit archetype, the hermit spiritual ego type, what happens is our life becomes very imbalanced. Actually, all these kinds of spiritual ego create an imbalance, but the hermit especially, because I think it can sort of stop us from just participating in normal life, solving ordinary problems. And yeah, it can sort of suck your soul out from you, from the inside out. Okay, finally, the prophet. And this is perhaps the trickiest of the lot, in a sense. They're all very tricky. But the thing is about the prophet is it has contacted real spiritual wisdom, and it might actually be quite far along on the path. And even advanced spiritual teachers can fall into the prophet archetype. I'm being sort of facetious when I say this, but the prophet basically believes it's the next Jesus. It's come to convert the world, to save humanity. It wears monk's robes and it shaves its head, and it believes it's arrived at the end of the path and it has nothing more to learn. It becomes a teacher and it tries to save humanity. It tries to teach everyone how to meditate, and it believes that it's the one to do that. And it's tricky because this is the bodhisattva vow, in a sense. The trick is, are we spiritualizing the self, or are we actually killing the self? Are we seeing our own crucifixion? Are we identifying with the divine and not self? This is the thing about the prophet. If we are too attached to this, to our titles, to being a veteran meditator, to being a yogi, we can end up spiritualizing the self, and the ego grabs onto that identity and it pulls us down. It doesn't pull us up, it pulls us down, because we're re-identifying with the ego again, when really the point is the opposite. So the prophet, and I think that's very relevant, especially for more advanced practitioners, but it can come up whenever you have like a convincing spiritual experience, or, you know, a jump in your spiritual knowledge in some way, you might want to become a prophet. And well, we're going to talk about how to destroy the spiritual ego right now. And of course, these tips are relevant for the prophet archetype. So we've learned about the six kinds of spiritual ego. As I said, it's not one thing. It is one thing in the sense we can generalize and say, this is what it is. But I don't think it appears as one thing. It appears as at least these six different kinds. And I've met all of them in other people and in myself. So how do we actually destroy it, dismantle it? There is a simple antidote to all of this. It may be quite disheartening to hear about all these traps, but I think you need to hear them. But again, there's a simple antidote, a simple solution. And this is an ongoing practice. Think of this in itself as an ongoing spiritual practice. Ask yourself these three questions I want you to ask you. Can you penetrate to the core of the teachings? Can you experience their truth in your first person experience? And can you take all of this with dead seriousness, yet with utter playfulness? If you can do all three of those, I think you're doing very well. And another general principle I want you to follow is not to talk about spirituality. And this goes even if you're a teacher of some kind, and I put myself in that category that I talk too much. The solution is not to talk, but to walk. Don't practice, preach, and don't grab on too tightly at any point. If you're talking too much and preaching too much, you're forgetting the essence, and you might, in the very moment that you're talking, be forgetting or have lost connection with the essence of the spiritual path. A couple of quotes from Jon Kabat-Zinn that I really love. And wow, if you keep these in mind, this will really help with everything that I've spoken about. Jon Kabat-Zinn says, quote, "The more you talk, the more energy you dissipate that might serve you better if it went into your practice. Bit by bit, you might become more of a proselytizer than a practitioner," end quote. Another quote, "When the impulse arises to talk about how wonderful meditation is and how you are benefiting from it, it's best to keep silent and sit some more," end quote. Wow. So don't talk, walk, don't preach, practice. This doesn't mean you can't teach other people. This doesn't mean you can't talk about it, but sometimes words, the more you say, the less you say, and you can spill out all that embodiment by putting all this energy outside. And these quotes and these tips go for anyone on the spiritual path, even if you're just getting into some sort of spiritual practice for the first time, or even if you feel like a veteran practitioner and you're a teacher and all this, these two quotes are, well, very, very powerful and very important to keep in mind at all times. And here is the ultimate solution, as far as I'm concerned. The tips I've given you so far are general things for the entire path. And this itself, this tip I'm about to give you, is a path in and of itself. But this is something you can do in the moment, in the exact moment, whenever you feel like you're falling into spiritual ego. Basically, we can destroy the spiritual ego by realizing that it's just our human personality talking. Therefore, it's impermanent, it's transitory, it's unreal. It's really like a mirage or a hologram on the sea of awareness, on our true, limitless, nothing nature. And whenever you notice the spiritual ego come up, I advise you to dismantle it in this way, by seeing it as a mirage, by seeing it as this limited personality talking, and then just rest in the true empty self that you are, and realize that nothing is outside of you, including all your impulses, including the sensation of other. Nothing is outside of you and your body. That is the ultimate solution to the spiritual ego, moment by moment by moment. So, thanks for watching this video about the spiritual ego. Make sure to subscribe for more and check out the website for tons of free resources, including the accompanying article for today's video, which has a bit more information on the spiritual ego and what to do about it. Take care, and I'll see you soon.